Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Star Entertainment Group half-year results 2016 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, February the 16th, 2016. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Matt Bekier. Please go ahead, Mr. Bekier.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everybody. I'm here with Chad Barton, our CFO, and I'm pleased to be able to present some pretty strong numbers to you today. I'm referring to the presentation that we put out on the ASX this morning. On page number four, we touch on the highlights. We had strong operating performance across each one of our operating fundamentals. Domestic tables up 12.3%, slots up 7.4% year-on-year, non-gaming cash revenue up a little bit, 1.1%, and operating costs well controlled at 3.2%. VIP business, we had turnover and normalized revenue up just over 1%. That's comping a very strong first half of last year, so we're quite happy with that number, particularly because at the AGM at the end of October, we were reporting that we were back on the previous period by 8.1%. So we've seen a little bit of acceleration. The one fly in the ointment's been a continuation of a poor win rate. For the first half, we had an actual win rate of 0.88%. It was at 1% as per the end of October. So that means that we have a normalized EBITDA of 310 million dollars, up 18.6%, and an actual EBITDA of 193 million dollars. In light of the fact that we've now had three or four periods where the win rate's been below what our long-term average has been, we have decided that for the full 2016 year, we will be normalizing at 1.35%, which is more reflective of our now updated five-year performance. On that basis, EBITDA would have been 293 million dollars, up about 20% on the previous period. The board has declared a dividend of 0.055 per share. That's up 10% on the previous first half dividend, and that really reflects just the fact that we've got good momentum in the underlying business and believe that there's, you know, more good news to come. And finally, I'll also touch on some of the other strategic priorities that we've worked on in the first half. On page number five, you get a pictorial representation of the main drivers of the results, and it's quite obvious from that chart that all of the growth really came out of The Star. And that illustrates, you know, what the combination of a competitive, modern product can do in the market with the solid economy. Let me now sort of double-click on each one of our operating units. Page number six talks to the performance at The Star. Normalized revenues up 7.9%, normalized EBITDA up 21.7%. Actually, EBITDA is down 43% again because of the win rate. Really, you know, pleasing revenue growth throughout the period in the core business. Slots up 12.4%, domestic tables up 14.9%, non-gaming up 7.9%. So these are very strong numbers. They're helped a little bit by win rates, particularly in tables that were pretty positive relative to the previous period. But, you know, it's really been a product of an increase in visitation of 4.1% and a better customer. So spend per visitor is up 8.6%. Operating costs up 5.8% for the period. If you compare that to the, you know, labor-intensive parts of our business, domestic tables and non-gaming, that is a good expense performance. The final point just to make is that the gaming tax has risen to 31.16%, up from 29.9% last year. That's because of that escalating tax regime that is in place in New South Wales for another couple of years. The impact of that is 8 million dollars. Turning over to Queensland on page number seven. Queensland's also had a reasonable result. Revenue up 3.8%, normalized EBITDA up 11.2%, actually EBITDA up more because, you know, while we're unlucky in New South Wales and BIP, we're lucky in Queensland. Revenues, slots up 2.9%, tables up 6%. We're happy with that because there's been a fair bit of disruption in the Gold Coast. And Brisbane, as you know, there's very little you can do to change the layout of that casino in the interim period. So the revenue growth really was driven by not additional visitation, but in a slight increase in the spend per customer. The result was also helped by the fact that we've been able to control operating expenses well in Queensland. Our operating expenses are down 1% on the previous corresponding period. The main driver, or one of the main drivers of our profitability, is performance in electronic gaming. Page number 8 shows you how we've gone with market share, and it's pleasing to see that we've continued to expand share in Sydney and held share in Queensland, with a slight outperformance in Brisbane and underperformance at Jupiter's, again, because of the disruption. Page number 9 talks to the international BIP business. So we've had a little bit of growth on the previous period. But as I said, the first half last year was, I think, over 50% growth on the year before. The win rate was 0.88%. That's below last year, as well as what we had as a long-term average. As a result of that, as I said before, and Chad's going to go through the details report, we will be normalizing at 1.35%, which is more reflective of what we've actually done over the last over historical perspective. The mix of business hasn't really changed. Junket's still about 78%, and the quality of the business continues to be high. And you see that when you look at our receivables, that's still stand at about $16 million, which is in line with the previous period. So we're happy with the performance of the VIP business, except for the win rate. Finally, in terms of the other priorities that we pursued over the last 6 months, we've completed the simplification of our brand architecture by initially changing the name of the company from Echo to the Star Entertainment Group. The next building block on that strategy will be the rebranding of Jupiter's later in the calendar year. We have made progress on Queen's Wharf. We've made good progress with our capital investments and the projects that we have underway in the Gold Coast and in Sydney. We've improved staff engagement. We have productively engaged with our partners, Charter Hook and Far East, to identify additional development opportunities that we can pursue in Sydney and in the Gold Coast. We're making progress on the loyalty program, maybe not as much as we had initially hoped, but we're still confident that we'll be able to start a fundamental relaunch of the loyalty program early in next financial year, sometime this calendar year. And we've had made good progress with further strengthening the management team around here. So that's been the first half. I want to now hand over to Chad to take you through the financials. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. Just turning to slide 12, and I'll take you through the P&L in some more detail. You know, as Matt has already highlighted, you know, it's been a strong first half performance, and I'll initially run you through the normalised results for the period. As you can see there, normalised gross revenue is up 6.7%. Domestic gaming revenue experienced particularly good results, with revenues up 10.2%. which is very consistent with the trading update that was given at the time of the AGM. Normalised international VIP gross revenue was down 8.1% at the time of the trading update at the AGM, but has improved to be up 1.7% by the end of the half. As Matt's highlighted, unfortunately, whilst volumes have improved, the win rate has not, with the win rate finishing at 0.88%. Versus being 1% at the time of the AGM. Non-gaming segment as a whole was up 0.7%, but what we're seeing is the Stars had a particularly strong period with 7.9% growth due to improved hotel occupancy and new food and beverage offerings. But whilst Queensland was down 7.6% due to disruption of the Jupiter's Hotel associated with the refurbishment that's going on. Looking at costs now, gaming taxes, levies and commissions on a normalised basis increased by 3.3% due to increased domestic volumes and a 1.7% increase in the average gaming tax rate for New South Wales due to the progressive gaming tax rates. This is partly offset by lower commissions due to lower win rates on profit share agreements in our international business. Despite strong revenue growth of 6.7%, operating expenses were up only 3.2%, highlighting continued strong cost management. Cost increases were predominantly driven by increased employee costs due to the volumes and marketing costs to support the growth in the domestic business. Normalised EBITDA was $309.9 million, up 18.6%. Depreciation and amortisation has increased by 6.1% as expected due to the capital investment programs that we've undertaken over the last 12 months. And interest costs have reduced by 11% due to a lower average debt over the half. Tax is up on a normalised basis by 39% due to the EBIT growth, with our effective tax rate in the half at 30.3%. Normalised net profit after tax was 142.1 and is up 26.1%. Turning to the actual results now, the difference between the normalised and the statutory results is due to the actual win rate in our international business in the half being 0.88% versus normalised of 1.43% and an actual win rate of 1.33% in the PCP. The impact of which can be seen clearly with a revenue reduction of $130 million versus normalised revenue. The impact of this low win rate flows through a reduction of normalised NPAT by $82 million to a statutory NPAT of $60.3 million, which is in turn down 38% versus PCP. When I'm on the topic of normalisation, we'll just turn to slide 13. And I'll give you an update on our process and our position that we're going to take moving forward. The current normalised win rate of 1.43% was set in financial year 2014, and at that time had been based on the historical average win rate for the group. We also highlighted back then and have continued to that we'd continue to monitor actual performance against this win rate. With our actual win rate experience over the last 2 years, the average win rate for the VIP business has now fallen below 1.43%. On this basis, we're adjusting a normalisation win rate to 1.35% for the full year 2016 results. And this is in line with not only our experience, but is consistent with the Australian and New Zealand market practice. The appendix on page 26 contains a pro forma of the normalised results at a 1.35% win rate for your comparison. Normalised EBITDA for the half would have been $293 million and NPAT $130 million at a 1.35% win rate. Turning to the balance sheet now, and despite our low win rate in our international business this half and the impact it has on statutory earnings, the capacity of the balance sheet remains strong with gearing at 1.3 times. Net debt is up $104 million on last financial year end, but it's at the same levels as December 2014, driven primarily by the low international win rate in the half, as well as CapEx. We continue to have strong cash collection at 99% of EBITDA, and trade receivables increased by 16% on June due to increased volumes in the VIP business in December in comparison to June last year. Net trade receivables past due of $16 million remains low and consistent with June 2015, and it highlights the continued effective credit management. Net derivative financial assets were up $32.6 million against last financial year end, mainly due to our USPP cross-currency swap positions, offsetting the impact of our US debt given the depreciation in the Australian dollar. We've also accounted for the initial investment in associates of $5 million as an equity investment into the Destination Brisbane Consortium in the first half. Turning now to slide 15 on our funding. We have undrawn bank facilities of $445 million at the end of the half, with an average debt maturity of 3.7 years. We continue to be fully drawn on our long-term USPP facilities, as well as our short-term working capital facility. And we continue to use our working capital facility as it is the cheapest source of our funding. Net finance costs were $23 million in the half, with full year expected to be circa $50 million, which is consistent with our previous estimates. Now just turning to CapEx, and as Matt's already covered earlier in the presentation, the group's embarked on a number of significant and exciting projects across all properties. Capital expenditure in the first half was $158 million due to projects delivered and underway primarily at Jupiter's and at the Star. Projects delivered in the half include new junket gaming salons and the buffet in Sydney, as well as two VIP gaming salons and garden kitchen restaurant at the Gold Coast. For the full year, we continue to expect capital expenditure to be in the range of $275 to $325 million, excluding Queen's Wharf. So in addition to this, CapEx for Queen's Wharf we expect to be $10 million in the second half and $77 million of government payments. Current projects underway are explained there in the table at the low part on page 16. In Sydney, we continue to have work and expansions done on the main gaming floor and Oasis levels, as well as the continued refurbishment of the Astral Tower and residences. On the Gold Coast, we continue to have ongoing refurbishment at the existing hotel. We're also going to do a bit of main gaming floor refresh, continued food and beverage expansion, as well as further building process on our new VIP suite hotel. Depreciation and amortization was $83 million in the half, with full year expected to be between $165 and $175 million, which is in line with our previous guidance. So to conclude from a financial perspective, the group certainly has a solid set of financial results this half, underpinned with excellent growth in our domestic gaming business. Our financial position and balance sheet remain strong, and the company is progressing well with its capital expenditure and expansion plan. I'll now hand back to Matt to take through outlook and priorities.
Thank you. Thank you, Chad. I'm on page number 18, and you know, starting with the priorities, they're probably best summarized as more of the same. Focus on operations, driving earnings, delivering the CapEx programs, now complemented by our implementation of the brand and loyalty strategy in this calendar year, as well as a new and renewed focus on improving our customer service through a large company-wide customer service improvement program. In terms of the trading in the first 6 weeks of this financial year, look, it's very similar to what we've seen in the first half. Good volumes, very consistent with what we saw in the first half. International VIP, we're happy with. Chinese New Year was, you know, is busy, and it's sort of in line with our expectations. A bit hard to give you a precise comparison because of the timing of Chinese New Year, but in terms of, you know, the way we look at it, both in terms of volumes as well as rates, where, you know, it's sort of within expectations. What you should also expect in the second half is that we will invest in the second half, and we'll invest some extra cost to launch a customer service program that I've mentioned earlier on, and to, you know, complete the brand and the loyalty strategy and the rebranding of Jupiter's and so on. So costs will go up a little bit in the second half. And you will see more disruption in the second half as the capital program ramps up and starts to hit areas that are more visible to the customer. But the way I think you should look at that is in light of a very strong first half, where hopefully we've demonstrated that we can drive earnings out of this business, and what we're doing now in the second half is investing to sustain that growth for the foreseeable future. Let me touch on a couple of the priority areas over the following pages. Queen's Wharf, page 19. The summary there is we're on track. A lot of preparatory work that is going into the project now. Most of the activity this year will be really planning related. So we're doing some soil testing, we're doing an environmental stock take, hopefully discovering some new species somewhere under the motorway, and we're undertaking a full audit of all the heritage, the 13 heritage buildings on the sites, to be more precise and effective with our planning. The work will then start early in 2017. Up until then, the burn rate on the capital expense will be relatively moderate. Over the page 20, on Jupiter's Gold Coast, we're making good progress on the previously announced $345 million redevelopment, where we do the new six-star suite hotel, the F&B expansion, and the refurb of the existing hotel. We are considering and have applied for planning approvals to further expand that property. And it really comes in, that further expansion is a reflection of our fundamental belief that we need more hotel capacity in all of our properties to compete successfully in the long run. So that that project, the expansion project, would have two stages. The first one is an additional 700 key tower that we will build on our site in a joint venture with Charter Folk and Far East. Under that joint venture, we'd be going in equal parts, a third each. And the way we are thinking about it is that the sale of the apartment component of this tower would essentially fund our share of the hotel tower. So we will get additional hotel and room capacity onto the island without a material outlay of capital. If we're successful with that, that then would probably give us the confidence to put some additional attraction drivers into the property, most notably an expansion of the main gaming floor to connect up the new tower with the main gaming floor and provide the additional capacity required for the additional footflow, a sports theater, some additional food and beverage, and additional retail to round out the experience. That second part of the expansion program would be entirely in our account. We currently estimate that would be up to $100 million over the next 5 years. And, the funding, would be generated essentially as all the other investments through our cash flows. And as Chad has demonstrated, our balance sheet is well positioned to do that. Over the page 10-1 on STAR, very similar story. We've got a $500 million program underway over 5 years. The focused area is expansion and upgrade of fiber gaming rooms, upgrade of the existing hotel rooms, improved access to the property and presentation, as well as additional food and beverage. That project is progressing well. In addition, we are contemplating an additional hotel tower with ownership structure and economics very similar to the ones that are described in the under the Gold Coast scenario. That tower is also with planning and will require a little bit of time to get through. That really summarizes, I think, the position and the priorities for us over the next little while. We're now opening up for questions. Thank you. Operator, if you want to take some questions now. Thank you.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the star key followed by the number 2. We will now take our first question from Michael Aspinall of JP Morgan.
Good morning, guys. Just a few questions from me. You had a strong performance on costs across the portfolio. What's the driver behind this, and is it sustainable?
You didn't quite get it. Strong focus on costs, was that what you said?
Strong performance on costs. I'm just wondering how you've kept them down so much.
There's a couple of things that go into this. Well, obviously in areas, and I think I said that at the last results, in areas where there's no change and no new facilities, we just remain tight, right? And, we now have better systems for rostering and scheduling. It's all about labor cost. And so I feel pretty comfortable that there's no surprises bubbling in the cost base from that point of view. In the areas where we have, open new facilities, like additional VIP rooms or F&B, obviously we put our additional staff on. And you see that the difference between Queensland and New South Wales. So Look, unlike in previous years, I feel pretty comfortable that we can adjust our labor levels quite quickly to different operating environments. So I feel that the margin should continue to expand.
Okay, that's great. Are you able to give us any kind of color on the types of, well, the scale of costs we should expect with the brand and loyalty?
Look, it's less than $10 million.
Okay, great. And one last one from me. Just looking at junket volumes slightly lower as a proportion of VIP, does this reflect a conscious effort to go direct, or is it just a slight variation between the periods?
Slight variation, but it does reflect the company strategy. We have made some recruitment and investments in the first half, which, you know, will come in stream in the second half and then be totally productive next year and next financial year in two areas. One is Southeast Asian direct business. We were underrepresented in our, you know, in some of the key markets there. And secondly, in the premium direct business, where we really hadn't really participated. Again, we've picked up a team that will now start to focus on that. And ideally, I'd like to see a much more diversified source of revenues for us in this market.
Great. That's all for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
We will now take our next question from Adam Alexander of Goldman Sachs.
Good morning, Matt. Just on VIP, obviously this reporting season, we've seen some really solid results in Australia so far. Just from your point of view, you know, we've seen no impact from on the policies that are sort of impacting Macau. The customers that are coming, are they your same customers coming more, or are we seeing junkets sort of, you know, add more trips to Australia as part of their sort of annual visit program now?
Look, it's so our revenue and our volume is very similar on last year. And, you know, that's part of the answer. So we've worked with the same junkets. The mix of junkets, you know, which junket is bigger than the next one changes a little bit, because I think there is some, you know, there is pressure clearly on some of the junkets, and not everybody's as liquid and can bring the same number of customers every time of the year. So there's a bit of a change in the makeup of the junkets. The players behind them, I would say we would still do 95% repeat business year-on-year. You know, at the higher end, high-end player doesn't just pop out of the sky. So these are people that we would have seen over the previous periods, but not necessarily the 6 months before, but over the last couple of years.
All right, that's helpful. And then just on the main gaming floor, obviously very strong growth across the Star. Could you just give us a bit more color on, yeah, so what you see as the key drivers there? Is it sort of low fuel prices? Is it coming through slots? And then what you're sort of seeing on premium mass as well?
So if we look at the growth at Star, there's, you know, visitation is up about 4%. So that's, you know, that's not outrageously strong, but we're seeing a better quality customer. And so that's the investments that we're putting in. And we've expanded our Oasis room. We've basically doubled that Oasis room. We're going to expand the main gaming floor and introduce an entry-level private gaming room on the main gaming floor over the next 6 months. We think that there's, you know, there's continued confidence, particularly in New South Wales, in the economy, and we see that. On the slot side, you know, the jackpot program, the loyalty program are both pretty effective. I should say I also sense that, you know, our sports activation program's been pretty good, and the combination of having some, you know, traffic drivers on the property and then easily accessible gaming product that you can get into is pretty effective.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
We will now take our next question from Mark Wilson of Deutsche Bank.
Thanks very much. Just looking at your junket play, I was just wondering if you could you know, tell us what proportion of that play is revenue share and how that compares to the prior period.
That's about 25% is revenue share, and that's probably up from about 20% in the previous period. Mark, the only additional thing I want to say is, and obviously, you know, the revenue share when you have a low win rate as we did, you know, our commission comes down because our junkers have to tip in some money. So I think at 1.35, that's about $5 million worth of, you know, help on the win rate in this first half, if you want. But it's highly sensitive to the specific play. So, you know, within the 20-25% of revenue share, you know, if a customer just, you know, ends up with a junker where we're on revenue share, it just creates a bit of noise in the data. And I'm not sure we sort of, you know, I think the revenue share will continue to grow and it will sort of normalize out. But right now we're in a position where it's a little bit unpredictable because depending on which customer goes through which program, you know, the commission moves up or down. You know what I mean? So
yes.
a bit of mess in the data. But I think over the next couple of years, you will see more profit share agreements and that noise will die down.
Okay, great, thanks. And does that essentially explain why your taxes, levies and commissions at the Star only increased by 2.4%?
Yeah, that's Mark, on the VIP slide. We highlight the $7 million impact of the lower commissions at the 1.43% win rate.
Okay.
As I said, with the profit share deals.
Okay, that's great. And hold rates at the Star in the private gaming rooms, where did they end up?
A little bit ahead of last year and long-term averages. So that was a bit of a tailwind in the first half for us.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Matthew Ryan of UBS.
Hi guys, I just wanted to ask you about your EGM performance in Sydney. Obviously you've been taking share over the last few years. Are you starting to get to a stage where it's any more harder to take share just because the business has grown, or, you know, is there a stretch target that you're sort of thinking about in the back of your mind that you can get to over the next few years in terms of market share?
With the current number of machines that we have, I don't think we are anywhere near capacity. That's the sort of first observation. Having said that, the competitive set is getting better, right? So we've seen, particularly in the pub world, pubs professionalizing their slots management, investing back into slots. You know, and if you look at the slots numbers, particularly in New South Wales, it's been a good market for everybody for the last 18, 24 months, and the better pubs have reinvested into their gaming product, have invested a little bit into loyalty, and we're seeing that. So it's getting harder, but, you know, we're also getting smarter, and I think with the loyalty reinvestment, better bonusing strategies that we're developing, you know, we should continue to take share. I'm not sure, I'm confident that we haven't maxed out yet.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Sasha Kroin from CLSA.
Good morning, guys.
Hey,
Matt, just wondering about your normalization method. I mean, given we're seeing this greater shift towards more revenue share business, shouldn't we also be normalizing the commissions as well, which I think is what the domestic peers are currently doing?
So, Sasha, it's Chad here. Yes, one of the considerations we'll have over a longer period of time is whether we do normalise the commissions. What we've highlighted is given everyone the information in the first half so you can see it. We have never normalised commissions. We've kept that pretty clean through our normalisation process over the last few years. So I feel that at this point in time we shouldn't do it, but we'll continue to keep you updated on what the impact will be on that normalisation. And if it becomes more significant, we'll consider it in the future.
And you know, Sasha, the only additional point is, you know, when the win rate turns around, of course it goes the other way around, as you understand. So,
right.
We'll continue to give you the numbers, but intellectually, I think it's a debate worth having.
Sure. Okay. Just a couple more questions. I mean, it's good to see some margin expansion coming through. Can you split out what your commission rates were in the period relative to the PCP on VIP. I'm not sure if it's in the presentation.
We haven't highlighted in the presentation, and I believe Sachin really is because of the confusion around the win-loss programs and the impact that that has on there. But it's around 0.77%.
Sasha, the reality is this market is on the margin pressure. Right? There's a heap of margin pressure in here. So my only advice to you would be don't model margin expansion in this business.
Yep. That does appear to be down, I think, on the PCP, though. And is that a reflection of a greater pushing towards direct VIP business?
It's a bit of mix. It's a change in the win-loss programs increasing within there. There's a couple of different factors associated with it. But, you know, as Matt's pointed out, I wouldn't bank that as the ongoing rate given the, as Matt said, the margin pressure in this particular part of the business.
Sure. And one final
question. And then, Sasha, we're not giving up on the business, so I'm not saying it's about that. All I'm saying is, long term, there's a lot of capacity coming on. There's some crazy deals being written. We want to continue to grow a business in a safe and consistent fashion. And, you know, if that means we have to slow down our growth to maintain some sort of respectable margin, then that's what we'll do. But the margin to expect or model a margin expansion here is probably not achievable.
Mm. When you refer to some of these deals that have been written, are you specifically talking about domestic competitors, or is that also include sort of the Philippines market?
It includes also the Philippines market, and in particular the Philippines market.
Okay. Final question. So just in terms of your new developments, I mean, is there any prospect, you may not be able to talk about it, but is there any prospect of negotiating some more favourable gaming concessions at any of your properties on the back of that, specifically around EGMs?
Oh, I'd love to, but everything that is in the presentation today is not subject to any of those negotiations.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Larry Gandler of Credit Suisse.
Hey guys, Chad, I was wondering how long your fingernails are, actually. Bit of a jest at just looking at cash flow. With the low win rate, I'm just wondering if you had a couple of periods of low win rate, given the liquidity and the debt facility coming up, can the company kind of, does the company have the liquidity to handle a couple of periods of lower win rates?
So, Larry, the short answer to that is yes. Obviously, we do our balance sheet modelling, and we do our balance sheet modelling at different win rates and different win rate assumptions over that period of time. You know, we're sitting at 1.3 times gearing at the end of the half, so, you know, it's very comfortable within our covenants structure that exists. Obviously, such a low win rate, you've seen it's added roughly about 0.2 to 0.3 times on the gearing ratio, and you can see, you know, if we continue to have that low win rate over a period of time, that the balance sheet can sustain it. But the focus intention is, you know, and our belief is, you know, it's going to return to more normalised kind of win rates over the medium period.
So we've talked, Larry, about this before in the past. You know, I think we have, through our own, you know, bumpy journey of the past, developed a view that says, you know, you can't gear up VIP earnings, and our balance sheet needs to be entirely carried by the domestic earnings stream. And that's how we look at it. And then we put a buffer on top of that for the times when we actually not just not making any money, but actually losing any of that. And that's how, you know, and the buffer is determined by essentially a statistical analysis of the probability of having multiple terrible results. And, you know, it's now north of 90% probability that we are, you know, able to sustain, it's actually a lot more than 90% probability to sustain even the most terrible results. So I feel pretty comfortable. You know, the headroom is over $100 million on the bad day over even shorter periods of time. So I'm very comfortable with where we stand.
Okay. I guess a related question to that is with regards to Queen's Wharf and some of those other newer projects, the new towers you mentioned, the cash flow projections for that, is that going to be undertaken by a special vehicle where you need to put in equity initially, or is it going to sort of the CapEx get paid as it goes?
Yeah, so Queen's Wharf's different to the other growth opportunities that we have. So Queen's Wharf, as we've highlighted before, there is equity that needs to go in first. The debt associated with Queen's Wharf is not likely really until 2020. So we do put in our share of the equity check up front. In terms of the other opportunities in both Sydney and Queensland on the Gold Coast, you know, we're doing those again with our joint venture partners, Chow Tai Fook and Far East. And as Matt's highlighted, you know, we're intending to go into that a third each within those investments. And the equity slash debt profile will be considered as well in the joint venture vehicles rather than necessarily all sitting in the equity in Star Entertainment's balance sheet. So, you know, as we go through, I think you'll see that a more typical joint venture debt structure on those particular assets.
Okay. And the Queen's Wharf equity injections, it's something like 70-something million in 2H, and then does it step up materially in F17?
No, not materially in F17. F17 is you know, as we head into more calendar year 17, we head into the demolition of the existing site, and it's, whilst it takes us a year to do it, it's not a heavy capital-intensive period of time. But we continue to put our equity into the joint venture vehicle over that period.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, guys.
We will now take our next question from Mark Bryan of Bank of America.
Yeah, morning, Matt. Thank you. Just on seasonality, Matt, in the past you've flagged the business as being all other things equal, a similar first half, second half split. Obviously, we need to take into account the win rate, but I'm just trying to think in terms of disruption impact. Will it be broadly similar, second half compared to first half?
No, we expect to now be hitting more visible areas to the areas that are more visible and more impactful on the customer. So at the Gold Coast in particular, you know, there's going to be an interim refresh of the main gaming floor that will happen in the second half. We are taking quite a few floors out now at the same time, both in the Gold Coast as well as in Sydney. So we will be hitting more in this half.
Okay, thank you. That's clear. And just obviously the win rate's getting a little bit of focus. Are you able or willing to say what the win rate's been in the second half so far?
Able but not willing.
Okay, thank you.
But look, in seriousness, so, you know, the first half result was a statistical event that I think is sort of borderline two standard deviations outside of what we expect to have.
Right.
And so that was a freakish result. And we've looked at it every which way. We looked at the distribution of bets. We looked at the players. We looked at who won. You know, we understood the lifetime history of the players that won us. And it's just bad luck. And bad luck is not sustainable. Bad luck and good luck are not sustainable. So, you know, this will normalize. And on the win rate, you know, we were running at 1.43 historically. I note that in the market, you know, if you take Crown, Sky, and ourselves, over the last 5 years, the market's running at 1.43. So we just were unlucky now for a little while. You know, we've taken the win rate down for the full year results. So partly because, you know, we just believe that if that's what our historical win rate is, it's the best proxy for where we can go. But it's also going to make comparisons easier going forward because it aligns all the normalization methodologies and normalization rates across the market. But, you know, there's no reason to expect that the win rate should continue at the low level.
Thanks. Well, that's helpful. So that analysis you did, looking at sort of the player trends, I mean, obviously it softened in November and December. Was that sort of a specific group of players, or was the weakness sort of generally across the board?
On the win rate?
Yeah, obviously it was running at 1% to October, and then you dropped to 0.88 for the half year.
There's six very, very happy guests who we cannot wait to welcome back to our properties.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thanks very much for that.
We will now take our next question from Sam Dobson of Macquarie.
Oh, good morning, guys. Just a couple of probably simple questions on employees. So, Matt, you mentioned in your opening remarks about strengthening the operational capability, adding some staff. Can you just sort of talk through what you've added and what that's expected to bring?
Well, we've added Salesforce capability. So we've added Salesforce capability, particularly in the VIP space. You may know that we hired a new head of who's based in Macau, and we are, we're adding some real capability here, particularly in the premium direct space where we haven't had any activity, as well as in Southeast Asia. We've added additional talent in loyalty. We've hired a new head of marketing in Sydney. We are adding, or have added, additional resources in gaming analytics. Those are sort of the key areas. And the focus of that is, particularly on the sales side, the effectiveness of that investment is very easy to assess. The salespeople either bring the customers or they don't. And I feel comfortable about that investment. On the analytical side and the marketing side, there's just a sense that we probably haven't been investing enough in that space, and that there's additional margin to be had from being a bit cleverer about our marketing reinvestment, about the specific campaigns and fine-tuning the effectiveness of our campaigns, and really understanding, what drives hold rate across the business.
Right. Okay. That's clear. And then just on the employee cost ratio, and it's really just, a clarification. Firstly, I guess the divergence between Star and Queensland, I assume, is just driven by the divergence in win rate.
And different, slightly different business mix, different EBAs.
Okay. I guess the second part of that is, you have driven, we've closed the gap, I guess, in terms of the employee cost ratio across those businesses. Is there, is there further potential there? And I guess, can the Queensland casinos get to the same sort of level as Star Sydney?
Well, the reality is smaller casinos tend to be less efficient than big casinos. You have a big, relatively large fixed cost component. So as we expand and build them out into integrated resorts, structurally they'll get closer. But right now, you take a property like Brisbane, it's actually quite inefficient. You've got tiny little rooms, you've got extra surveillance, you've got too many entrances, and then you've got a tiny little gaming floor. So structurally, it will take some time till we can build up modern, efficient gaming floors.
Okay, understood. Thanks very much.
Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Rohan Sundram of Citi. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just a question on VIP. And apart from junket consolidation, are you seeing any impact from the corruption crackdowns or the liquidity tightening in China that's perhaps making it harder for VIPs to come here or take money out?
The short answer is not really. And the long answer is there's a lot of things that have gotten harder. So, if you look at our results on paper, we've had good volumes after all. Our settlement and our bad debts continue to be, we haven't extended our settlement periods. our debt experience, bad debt experience is unchanged. That sort of says, you know, the junkets in particular continue to be able to settle and collect. So that's just sort of that, you know, the answer at one level. At another level, you know, particularly now that we have, you know, are getting much closer to the action in Macau through our sales team and our credit teams, there is clearly pressure on a bunch of junkets. There's clearly, and you see that that leads to the consolidation that you referenced. It leads to the pressure on some of the deals that are being put forward. Clearly, there's just not as much liquidity around as there used to be. And I think when you talk to the junkets, they think, start to think quite hard where they start, where they send their customers to, and what programs they're putting their customers on, because the junkets are trying to maximize their financial position much more rigorously than they have done so in, than they have in the past.
Great, thank you.
Okay, good. Looks like we're out of questions. Look, I just want to thank you all for attending the call. Hopefully, you get a get a good sense of how the business is tracking, what the priorities are, and I look forward to catching up with you individually over the course of the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now all disconnect.